Well, guys, 24-23 on the road. You know, usually you could say, okay, road game, tough team, you know, not a big deal. But we're seeing things that in the past have been problems that have not been improved.
And I am assuming you're meaning closing games. I mean, that's sort of the elephant in the room on both sides of the ball. You know, everybody wants to talk about the defense isn't good enough and you can't let a guy get behind you. Well, this offense needs to move the ball, get first downs, and certainly the failure to close in the red zone. That was why you lost the game. Usually that's a strength of this team. And, you know, one thing I've the Gronkowski factor there. You know, he only has three touchdowns. I mean, you're talking about a guy who set an NFL record for touchdowns last year. You wonder if he's just limited, if teams are taking him away. But that's a key factor in the red zone, which is a key factor in finishing, which is a key factor in losing.
And, you know, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think there was a breakdown on all three phases toward the end of the game. The coverage on that punt, okay, set him up in good field position. Obviously, the offense, the inability to put some points on the board late, and then, of course, the defense letting up, you know, those long passes throughout the game. So I think we're seeing breakdowns in all three areas.
And that's a good thing you said?
Well, yeah. but I think there...
What's the confusion?
I think the only bad thing about that is the secondary, that may not be correctable. I think all the other things, including Brady's bad play at the end of the first half and the clock management by the sideline, I think those are things we don't usually see that probably won't repeat themselves on a weekly basis.
But some of these things we have seen sort of repeat themselves. I thought they managed the clock really badly at the end of the first half against Denver in a game that they won that no one talked about afterwards because it didn't matter because you ended up with a 31-7 lead. But I thought they left points on the board by rushing and trying to get cute. At the end of the half, they ran the ball, got stopped, and had to kick a field goal where I think if they had just taken a timeout and set themselves up, they could have had more. Same thing that happened. It's a red zone missed opportunity in a game that you won, so it's not as magnified. In terms of Brady not being able to close out games, that's been sort of a factor that's shown up in, that's a commonality in all these games that they've lost. Now, they don't lose very often, so the sample size is really small, but his numbers leading by one score late in the game are not good, and they haven't been good for the last 4 or 5 years. I heard a stat on the radio about that earlier this week. These kinds of things, yes, I agree with you, Fred, they are correctable, but they haven't been corrected. They are popping up time and time again.
Well, you look at the red zone, particularly for the offense, okay? It's not like they didn't move the ball against the Seahawks defense. They did move the ball. When they got into the red zone, they seemed to have trouble. Now, part of it is the Seahawks defense.
Absolutely.
You got to give them
Absolutely.
Credit. You know? The other part of it is, you know, that running game that we saw, you know, when they're huddling up and, you know, they're expected to run it. They had a little bit of trouble on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that you bring up the Seahawks, and I think that specifically this game, I think you can give them a little bit of slack. And I also don't think the red zone has been a tremendous problem all year. This is one thing where I agree with Fred. I think on Sunday, the 1-for-6 was obviously a glaring part of the reason why they lost. But Seattle's got the big cornerbacks, and that kind of works to your advantage a little bit in a tight area, you know, in the red zone. Andy brought up Rob Gronkowski. Well, those two cornerbacks are pretty big. You know, maybe they had a little bit more success in sort of crowding some areas. They try to go to Gronkowski on the play at the end of the first half, the play before the intentional grounding. And he was open briefly, and then they also get some pressure with the front four. So I think you're right, Fred. Give Seattle a little bit of credit for this week. Now, we all look at it. We know this offense is so productive all the time. We look at it as what we didn't do, but sometimes the other guys had something to do with it.
You know, and then Brandon Bolden getting hurt, you know, maybe that affected the running game. I don't know. You know, but I know they don't want to look at injuries as an excuse, but they do come into play. And I think particularly on the other side of the ball, when it comes to safety play hasn't been that strong to begin with. But now you have Gregory out and then Chung goes out during the game. And I think you're left with, you know, Nate Ebner and Wilson playing back there. I think that was a factor.
Well, I think it's a factor, obviously. You don't want Nate Ebner, who didn't play defense in college, to suddenly, you know, a month and a half into his NFL career, he's on the field with a game on the line. So it's not surprising that he's maybe not in the perfect position to help out, although clearly it was Wilson that got beat on the game-winning touchdown. But a bigger factor to me than just the injuries is, you know, not wanting to play certain people. Kyle Arrington gets yanked. You know, Razai Dowling seems like they don't really want to play him. Sterling Moore is sort of fallen off the map. Those guys aren't hurt. It's just like the coaches feel like they're not good enough to play. And if that's true, then why are they on your roster? Because as you deal with injuries, if you have injuries and don't want to play other guys, well, now you have nobody out there. Well,
that's a legitimate second guess, too, because I don't think you had to have Nate Ebner out there. And Andy's right. He wasn't the main problem on that play. He was late coming over to help, but it was Tavon Wilson who bought the double move by Sidney Rice. But you didn't have to have Ebner out there. You had two or three other options, and even if you didn't feel overly comfortable with one of them as a safety, why not some extra defense, you know, Arrington and Dowling, extra defensive backs, and go from there. I don't think you had to have four guys on the field and one of them being a guy who didn't play defense as a collegiate.
It's not necessarily, oh, I need playmakers there. I just need experience there,
right.
Guys who won't make a mistake rather than a play.
The anti-Nate Ebner.
Right.
I mean, even if you feel comfortable with Wilson, who's also, by the way, a rookie sort of getting his feet wet, Ebner is not a guy that's going to give you that sure play because he hasn't played enough at any level to give you sure play. And then the other aspect of that Paul touched on is just being in base defense there, and you wonder, and I know Bill says, you know, you got to play the defense as called. Well, if that's true all the time, then why do you have all these different packages? Why do you change week to week your game plan? Game plans mean something. Matchups mean something. And I just think that was a play where you want, the one thing that beats you is a deep play over the top. You want more bodies deep down the field, not at the line of scrimmage.
Obviously, the mistakes overshadowed some good play. Again, we talk about the offense moving up and down the field, you know, really, you know, chalking up the yards against a good defense.
I thought that was a really good sign. And that's something, you know, and I don't want to dismiss it because it's something we expect, but I do expect it. I expect this team to be solid against the run.
And you also expect Wes Welker to be the guy he is.
And he
I don't
is.
Think he can get enough praise for that game. He got lit up four or five different times. Even, you know, not just after the catches, on the one interception, if you're watching the background as he's starting to return it, Welker's getting lit up. You know, he goes to the sideline and he seemed to kind of be telling trainers, it hurts all through here. All through here hurts.
Basically from here to here.
Right. Yeah. And then he comes back in, I think, three plays later because it's a third down and you need a first down. And the first thing you do is throw it to him at the sticks. The guy is amazing. He does not get – I'm not even saying money and all that. I'm just saying the credit he deserves for being just a tough SOB.
Wes Welker has been a big topic for me this season, and he continues to be the way he's played on the field. Andy talked a little bit earlier in the meeting about all the hits he took on Sunday and just how tough this guy is. And it got me thinking, what do you do with Wes Welker moving forward? Do you sign him? Or do you look at all the hits he took on Sunday and say, I don't know if I want to make a long-term investment in him? Really a tricky situation. It's like a point-counterpoint with myself. On one hand, I look at all the catches he makes and how important he is to the offense and what happens if you lose him. But on the other hand, I wonder, how much longer can he continue to take that punishment? Another area that I've talked about a lot this season has been the extra defensive backs and how it seems to be a little bit of musical chairs. Alphonso Dennard seems to be the guy right now that's settled into one of those spots, but now it's more of a leading role in place of Kyle Arrington. But my problem is, what happens after that? Arrington has struggled. Rasai Dowling can't get on the field. Sterling Moore has struggled. All of these guys have had their chances. They have rookies out there with the game on the line on Sunday. Bill Belichick is going to need to find some players that he's comfortable with and has some confidence in, because right now the secondary is in shambles. Chandler Jones continues to excite everyone with his play up front. It seems like every game he's finding a way to make an impact play. He had another strip sack on Sunday. But here's the problem. The pass rush really is all about Chandler Jones, and that's really too much to ask for a rookie. The Patriots are going to need to find some ways to get more pressure on the passer. As we talked about, the secondary is struggling. They're going to need some help up front, but it's got to be from someone other than Chandler Jones.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
Right now, I'm still faking the fake, so I try to fake it till I make it.
New England Football Night is presented by AT&T, the nation's fastest mobile broadband network. Putnam Investments celebrates 75 years of pursuing performance excellence. Putnam is a proud partner of the New England Patriots. Images of the Week, brought to you by Jack Daniels. Drink responsibly.
Images of the Week this week, it was a close game, but close doesn't do it. And I'll show you how close. Here's Patrick Chung on one of Seattle's touchdowns. Next, we have Kyle Arrington. Same thing, close, but no cigar. Finally, Alphonso Dennard just kind of wraps up the day for the New England Patriots.
Player Perspective. Brought to you by Putnam Investments.
Joined now in the Patriots locker room by Zoltan Mesko, Patriots punter, who the Wall Street Journal once called the most interesting man in the NFL. So we'll start with that open-ended question. Why are you so interesting?
Well, first off, I mean, it's all arbitrary whether they called me that or not. But why am I so interesting? I don't know. I guess I kind of keep things I mix things up. I don't do the same thing over and over again. I don't like to get into habits, so I like to learn a little bit of everything. So I wouldn't call myself super well-rounded, but I'm okay well-rounded.
And you seem to have a lot of varied interests in the off-season that pop up. You know, you're at NASCAR, you're going to business school, you're doing finance internships. Is that just, you know, taking advantage of every opportunity that comes your way?
I would say so, just because of the position we're in today. If you're going to be offered a all-access pass to a NASCAR race, you're going to take it, just because it's so cool. I mean, you got cars flying around at over 200 miles an hour, and the team aspect of it, which I never knew. Just different things. I mean, you can go to different plays or something. If you're going to be offered that, why not take advantage of it?
Okay, I read a story how you got started in football in the eighth grade. You were a great kickball player, and you broke a light and sort of had the option to pay for the light or join the football team, and you chose the latter, and obviously it worked out for you. Do you ever wonder what would have happened if you had just paid for the light and hadn't played football and where you'd be now?
Yeah, well, I always wonder about a lot of things, including if the ball would have hit a line drive instead of a pop-up kick right into the light. So it was, you know, there's all these accidents in life that happen that take your, you know, veers your life off in a different path. And I'm, you know, you can call it an accident, but maybe it was written out.
I've seen you out on the practice field practicing your fake punts off by yourself. You kind of have that old school knee pump quarterback, like you want to roll out and throw a pass. You're hoping for that someday?
Someday, hopefully. But right now I'm still faking the fake. So I try to fake it till I make it.
Okay.
As Paul pointed out earlier in his points, this defense in the secondary is in shambles. That means the onus is on the run defense to do its job this week. We know the Jets want to run the ground and pound. For most of the year, Sean Green is the one who's been getting pounded, but that changed last week. Big 160 yards against a bad Colts run defense. New England needs to stop at least one thing on defense. That's the ground game. Vince Wilfork, Gerard Mayo, do your job. The NFL may be about the passing game these days, but I'm sticking with the run game offensively. Patriots need to run the football. It's been pretty simple. 3-0 when they rush for more than 150 yards, 0-3 when they rush for less than 100 yards. They need to get Stephen Ridley running early. The Jets, 28th ranked in run defense. This is not a usual Rex Ryan unit that's stout against the pass and the run. They can be run on. Get Ridley going early, and it equals a win. And we finish this week with talk of finishing. We talked about it in the morning meeting, but what's the best way to finish a game? With a quick start. The Jets feel good this week. They're coming off a big win. They're coming to Foxborough. They can secure first place in the AFC East. They're an emotional bunch. Kick them down early. Get off to a fast start so we don't have to worry about the defense. We don't have to worry about Brady's efforts in the fourth quarter. Start fast and finish easy.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
I don't want to give everybody a trophy.
You want to give the defense a trophy because you're not that good.
Patriots Football Weekly, brought to you by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Around the NFL.
Going into week 7 of the NFL regular season, and it's never too early to talk about coaching hot seats. And I can't imagine any seat right now is hotter than North Turner's over at the San Diego Chargers. Look, since he took over the Chargers in 2007, he's 52-34. That's very respectable. But when it comes to the big games and when it comes to the playoffs, you know, their team just doesn't get it done. And it's not like they don't have the talent. They just seem to self-destruct. Monday night's game is just another example. Up 24-0 in the first half, you just blow it. You give up 35 unanswered points in the second half. You had a chance to go up 2 games in the AFC West, and you just didn't get it done. North Turner's not getting it done, and I can't imagine if things continue, he's going to last another season as the head coach of the San Diego Chargers.
There's only one head coach who's been with his team longer than Bill Belichick, and that's Andy Reid in Philadelphia, and it may not be for much longer. Right now, Reid is really under the gun in Philadelphia, and that's not a good place to be feeling the heat. Eagles have turned the ball over 17 times already this season. Michael Vick cannot protect the football, and Andy Reid may not be able to protect his job much longer. Look, the guy's had a lot of success. 5 NFC championships. He's been to a Super Bowl, 9 times to the playoffs. But if they don't get there this year, I don't think he'll get another shot.
I have to admit, I wasn't always the biggest Ray Lewis fan. We all know there were some issues off the field early in his career that, you know, gave him a bad reputation. But when he finishes his 17-year career, and it looks like that could be this year due to the torn triceps this weekend, he goes down as one of the greatest players to ever play the game and a throwback. In this day and age of throwing the football and fantasy numbers, Ray Lewis is a true middle linebacker. He can rush the passer. He can stuff the run. He can drop into coverage. He could do it all. He's the last of a dying breed. We're going to miss you, Ray Lewis. You played a style we may not see moving forward.
Trash Talk, brought to you by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Baxter dumpster in a bag can take it on. Visit thebaxter.com for more info.
The Patriots are 3-3, but at this point, which side of the ball is more responsible? Offense or defense?
I know Fred said early in the show this was a team loss. All three phases failed, and he was okay with that. I still don't get that. But I think this defense is just continuing to come up short. And, you know, we talked all offseason, okay, they're going to be better in the secondary because they brought in Gregory and they drafted Wilson, and the pass rush is going to be better, and we can fall back on the run, so it's all coming together. It hasn't come together. I see the same secondary that when the game is on the line, or even before then, quarterbacks are just very comfortable dropping back, throwing the ball deep, and watching their guy make a play on the ball, move down the field, and score points. I'd like to say it's a team loss. I'd like to blame the Hall of Famer Tom Brady, but I think it's on the defense.
Listen, everything you just said about the defense, I would agree with, but I still have to say that the offense is more responsible. That's not fair. It's not fair to Tom Brady. It's not fair to the offense, but they're much better than the defense, and they need to win the game for this team to have the ultimate success.
So they should be better than the number one offense in football.
Well, they need to get better on defense, but they can't have the periods on offense that they had on Sunday. You can't go 1-for-6 in the red zone. You can't go 3-and-out the last 2 possessions and punt the ball away while you're protecting a 6-point lead. You have to be able to finish off the game.
You can't get a 13-point lead and expect to win the football game.
They had the same problems. No, the defense isn't good enough, and they have to be able to play 60 minutes. The offense is the unit.
So it's the defense's fault. The defense isn't good enough.
To me, the offense is the unit that hasn't played up to capabilities consistently more so than the defense. The defense is what it is.
Has played up to capabilities?
I don't think the defense is very good.
I mean, how many first-round picks are we going to have? How many second-round picks are we going to have? They're supposed to have the capability to be competitive NFL defenders.
I saw scenarios that quarterbacks could throw the ball the way they did on Sunday against the Patriots defense. I did not see scenarios that the offense could not get a first down against Baltimore.
So when the offense plays the number one defense in football, the number one defense in football, and they get a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter,
yep.
This team shouldn't win that game?
The offense has to take
it home.
That's
the offense's fault?
The offense has
to
take
it home.
That's ridiculous. That
is absolutely asinine.
Listen, I'm telling you that it's unfair to put all of the burden on the offense.
Yes, because it's just flat out wrong.
But the defense is what it is, Andy. It's not very good.
And that's why it's the defense's fault that you're a 3-3 football team.
But who played more out of character is my point. You were moving the ball all day. You had 450 yards.
It doesn't matter about character.
All you had to do was get a first down and the game is over.
This isn't about expectations. This is about the fact that this defense is not good enough to play.
Yes, it is about expectations. Who is not performing?
Complimentary foot. Yeah, the defense isn't performing. Thank
you. But up to capabilities. The defense is playing the way they are. This is what they're
terrible,
they've
and they're the reason
unit.
Why you're 3-3.
But they have
you're
to be better.
You're trying to blame the offense.
They
you're
have
trying
to
blame
this is a
Tom
team,
Brady and the number one ranked offense.
This is a team that prides itself on situational football, and offensively now, not defensively, offensively, situationally, they have been poor when it's counted
most. They've been worse.
When it's counted most,
because they've never been worse quarters. Situationally than with the game on the line and the other opposing quarterback
what
at midfield throwing the ball deep down the field to a wide open receiver. You're like the little league coach. Oh, everybody gets a trophy. You know what? We're competing.
I don't want to give everybody a trophy.
You want to give the defense a trophy because you're not that good, and you're not expected
you said it
to be
yourself.
Good.
It's the number one offense in football.
Right.
Act like it when the game's on the line.
They acted like it. They got you a 13-point lead against the best defense
in
football.
Act like it when the game's on the line.
Wait, 23 points against the best defense in football is not a good day?
2 punts when the game was on the line.
Oh, okay.
That's not a good day.
Yeah, let's blame the defense.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. Welcome to Bud Light Fantasy Football, where every bottle is a player.
My Bud Light threw for 4 TDs.
Draft players using codes on specially marked bottles of Bud Light.
Mine won the game with a 60-yard field goal. Manage your team at BudLight.com/FFL.
My Bud Light fumbled at the 3-yard line.
My Bud Light extended my winning streak.
When Bud Light is on your roster, every game is a win.
My Bud Light made him cry.
Bud Light Fantasy Football. Start building your team today.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Roach Brothers Tasty Tailgating, official tailgate partner of New England Football Night. Read and React, brought to you by Yokohama.
All right, it's time in the show to take the questions that you've sent to AskPFW@Patriots.com. But first, after a crazy week in the NFL, how has that affected the Wilson Hart Power Index?
Well, the one constant is the Atlanta Falcons. The only undefeated team remains number one in the power rankings. The number two team is probably going to take a little mocking from my established panel here. Chicago Bears move up to the 2 spot. Houston falls to 3 with their first loss. Then we have the Giants at 4. San Francisco and the Ravens tied at 5. And then the Patriots come in at 7, only down 1 spot after the loss, and are still the highest rated 3-3 football team. Down the bottom, Titans, Chiefs close it out.
Okay, well, be interesting to see how that transpires.
The numbers don't lie. The Patriots are the best 3-3 team in football.
I'll leave you alone for Chicago for now.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the questions. This first one comes in from Stan, and he wonders, if Romeo Crennel was the defensive coordinator, Eric Mangini was coaching the secondary, would the same players be playing better, Paul?
I have to think they probably would, because I think those guys are excellent coaches. I think they have a lot of experience, but I don't think it would be markedly better. I think that the problem here is talent. Now, you could say if you had those guys on your staff, the whole pre-draft process and all the scouting that you do and everything that you do that goes into acquiring players might be better, because Crennel and Mangini were part of a very successful operation here, obviously the earlier part of the 2000s when they won a lot of titles. But to just say it's about coaching, I think that they go out there with different schemes and different but the players are the same. And to me, they're not getting the job done on the field. It's much more, I don't know, 75, maybe 80%, 20%, it's on the players. It's on the talent to me.
This next one has me shaking my head a little bit. James C. writes in, and he's really down on Brandon Spikes. He says he doesn't think he adds much value to the linebacking core, throws his body on piles, isn't aggressive. And what do you have to say to
that? Yeah, I don't know what he's watching, because he epitomizes aggressive. At times, he runs himself out of plays because he's so over-aggressive. And I like his physicality. Sounds like he doesn't like the physicality. I like that he basically either picks a pulling guard, picks a running back, and says, I'm going to blow you up. I'm going to hit you as hard as I can. This is a physical game in the trenches. I like what he brings to the defense. I think this defense lacks something when he's not on the field with that style of play. And I know maybe it's sort of a dinosaur. You don't need a ton of those guys. But I still think you need one of those guys on a defense. And to me, Spikes brings that to this defense.
I think James might have been watching the DVRs of games where Spikes wasn't playing last
year. Maybe, yeah. I have no idea what he's watching.
Well, remember to send your questions to AskPFW@Patriots.com.